No, I'm in the square. Okay,
let's take a look at...
I have got the check in your
I was going to bring my tablet for it. Okay, I'd appreciate it if you put your phone off and if you don't walk in and out answering phone calls. So the students understand it. Let's look. Let's look at the question of the Moshe Mashiach and Gilgulim, reincarnations, and the world to come. Try to get a clear okay, to approach the subject of Mashiach and the Yehudim and Olam Haba, that I think the easiest way to do that is to begin by trying to describe a timeline that shows where all these things fall. There's a problem here in that the sources that deal with these things, legitimate sources, use many terms interchangeably. Words like Gan Eden, Olam Haba, Yes, amazing. Yemos HaMashiach. Many of these words are used very non-specifically or interchangeably. It's very hard to know what is referring to what exactly and what the stages are. There are also many questions here. What exactly will be the status of the world in Yemos HaMashiach? What will be the status of the world in Olam Haba? What will be with Torah? What will be with Mitzvah? There are sources that say that there will be no more Torah in Olam Haba. There will be no more mitzvahs. There are sources that say there will be Megillas Esther and Purim. There are sources that say there will be all the mitzvahs, including Korbanos. There are sources that say there will be absolutely none. There are a lot of complex questions that you can put together in many permutations in terms of what will be the features of each of these stages. The general answer to those questions, which I'm not going to go through now in detail, but I recommend you look up yourself, there's a very lengthy section that is very nicely put together in the last paper that was published of the Leshem's work. Someone in Eretz Yisrael has taken all the parts of all the Sforim of the Leshem that are Shavah L'Kol Nefesh, the parts that don't require technical Kabbalistic background, and constructed one comprehensive work bringing a lot of his sections that they do have a lot of Kabbalistic material, but with the general background usually is good enough to follow through most of that work, and that's known as Shaarei Leshem. And he has a classic section at the end of that work. He has the works organized into sections of Torah, things like the Chira, things like the Yetzias Mitzrayim, Chazal HaMorishim. The last section there is Yemos HaMashiach and related subjects, And there he has a very lengthy section of which he's collated of all the places the Leshem talks about those things, and the general form of the answer to all those questions is, and he does a fantastic job of laying it out for you, is that whenever we talk about challenges or conflicts in the concept of Yemoisa Mashiach Olam Haba, etc., some sources say there will be mitzvahs, some say there won't, etc. What the Leshem does is he sorts out the chronology of those phases in sequence and shows you how all of those comments are true, each one in a particular phase. When Mashiach comes, there will be a time with his Bechira and mitzvahs and korbanos. Then there will be a time of Tzkiyas HaMeitim, and then there will only be Purim and Megillah. And then there will be a time when none of that will be shaykh at all. And he actually lays out for you very, very beautifully in sequence all the stages, each stage with its own characteristics, and how the whole process is a spiraling towards a final situation. That probably, I think, in our generation is the classic source, if you're interested in answering those questions. But let us work through a timeline that gives an idea of what Chazal tell us about the phases that will follow the phase we're in now. And let's try to make it not just a laying out of a timeline, but let's try to share a little bit of the Torah of these phases as well, and see where it takes us. If you make, how's your imagination?
Good? Imagination? Good?
Yeah.
Let's make a timeline of history, right? So we would say, the way to do it is, we would begin with 6 days, let this be the 6 days of creation, and then we move into a parallel corresponding 6,000 years. We are now about here. We're about here. Because we have 5,700 and whatever it is, 66, and there are only 6,000 years. Shit al day shin, cutting all those words, there are 6,000 years during that the world will exist, broken into 2,000, 2,000, and 2,000. The first 2,000 called Soyu, which means chaos. The second 2,000 called Torah. The first 2,000 end when Avraham Avinu comes on the scene when he's 28 years old. The second 2000 ends around the time of the sealing of the Gemara, or at the beginning of the phase of the Gemara after the mission of the days of Rav. And 2000 years later will bring us to the year 6000, into which time will end the, let's call it the Lama Bar for now, we'll go into more specifics. These phases of 2000 have different characteristics. The first 2000 is called Toyu, when the world doesn't yet have a Torah form. Then there are, from Avraham Avinu through all the phases of Torah should become Torah Shabbat, the world has a Torah form. And then we come into what's called Mashiach, which the Mephoshim say back to the same chaos. Okay, you haven't noticed, not where we're living. The same sort of chaos that there was before. So it's not just chaos in the conventional sense, it's also chaos in a very deep sense. For example, the Chazanish explains that the world no longer, in these 2,000 years of Torah, the world no longer has, in these 2,000 years of history, the world no longer has a Torah form. Just one classic illustration of that, although it's a deep and lengthy subject, one classic illustration is that there are physical things now in the world that are not normal. For example, the Gemara tells us that what we're talking about here, this phase, talks about certain tropes, classic examples. You may be animals, and we have a certain simonim that make them what we call a trope. Now, one of the characteristics of a trofa, not a defining characteristic, don't be confused about that, but one of the parameters or correlates of a trofa is that an animal that has one of these 18 particular injuries, lesions, anatomical problems with it, pathological problems, this animal will not live for a year. Again, that's not part of the definition, don't make a mistake. If it has this injury, it's a trofa, irrespective of how long it will live. But it happens that the Gemara says that, and it has application in medical halacha too. We call a person who's terminally ill somebody who'll live less than a year. It has application there too. But these particular types of injuries will not let the animal live longer than a year. Now, in our day, we see animals that have things like that can be cured, that can live longer than a year, completely against what the Gemara says. And conversely, we see animals that the Gemara says are not a trope, which means that no one can live more than a year. We see animals like that guy. In other words, it appears to us that at least in the area of trophies, I'm just talking about that right now, it seems to be that the Gemara is wrong. What Chazal are telling us is actually wrong in terms of its pathological consequences. So the Chazanish
The Chazanish says that the reason is that
the phase of history during which the world looks normal is only here. Here animals do what they're supposed to do. Here animals do what they're supposed to do. Here what the Bible is telling us apply. Because this is called Torah. We now move into a chaotic situation, a free messianic breakdown where the rules no longer apply. And therefore, of course, don't get confused.
An animal that has a particular biology is called a traitor anyway, and has all the halakhas of a traitor. But don't expect it to obey the rules of biology that are the higher rules of biology, because the world's now chaotic in that sense. Okay, are you with me? Yeah. That's a famous Chazanish, and someone wrote a whole sefer about a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago, called Ishtamusat Tfoim Halakha. Very interesting sefer. He culls together all the areas of halakha that deal with natural phenomena that have changed because we're in the last 2,000 years. Many phenomena, our bodies are weaker in many ways, our women's physiological cycles no longer function the way they used to with the same regularity. There are many things that no longer look the way they used to. That's because we've moved into
these 2,000 years of Torah.
Wednesday, I think, with the days of Rav.
Rav.
Well, you can calculate backwards because we're 5, 7, 6, 6. Take two. Yes. No, so Rav Moshe said about that the halakha of the traitors remain completely. Only what the Gemara is not talking about, and is of no interest to the Gemara, is that you'll see that some of the physiological phenomena do not correlate with halakhas anymore. And you may ask the problem, and that's what the Chazanish is doing.
Now, what cures in the Gemara don't?
No. The reason why cures in the Gemara are not. Excuse me, yes, but that's only one of the reasons. The reason that cures in the Gemara, all the medicine in the Gemara is no longer applied. One of the reasons we no longer apply that is for this reason. There are others as well. And of all basically halakha, the one classic area that's no longer applied is both diagnosis, prognostication, and therapeutics that the Gemara talks about. But one of the reasons is because it's no longer relevant in our, there's much deeper reasons as well. And all based on the misconception that the Gemara is really a medical textbook, which of course is not at all. By no means comprehensive as a medical textbook. It's not really talking about those. But that's important application, yes. So, now, and then we get to a phase called Yom HaMashiach, which is somewhere before the year 6000. At the end of the year 6000, we're not talking about Mashiach. Then we're talking about the beginning of what the most general term would be Olam Haba, which is not that very famous. But Mashiach is somewhere from the year 4000, could have come anywhere from the year 4000. And again, there are conflicting sources on this. There was this one place that Sancheri could have been, Gog, Magog, and Chizkia could have been Mashiach. But generally speaking, the basic concept is that Mashiach could have come anywhere in the phase of Mashiach, which is from the year 4000, and will come somewhere before the year 6000. I'm not going to go into the Mephetis, whether it's another 90 years or 70 years, but basically in the year 6000, somewhere before that. In other words, today, tomorrow, or Sunday, Mashiach could arrive, and then the Western Mashiach will last from that day until the year 6000. Now only one day. And it may only be one day. In that day, it will be compressed a tremendous amount of content, but we have no way of knowing. In fact, it's axiomatic in Torah that we cannot predict the date in which it will come, but it will last from then until the year 6000. Now, let's go into this timeline and try to extract some of the interesting features of it. Let me start with an amazing area of Torah that Maharal talks about, and that is this.
You notice that the Yom HaMashiach are in the 6000 years, and they lead to what's called Olam Haba. Let's begin with that problem. The problem is this. What is the nature of Yom HaMashiach? It's clear from all our sources that Yom HaMashiach, this phase, is intermediate between the world we're familiar with now and Olam Haba. It's a junction of God. It joins together where we are now in our place of history, together with the post-messianic age, the world to come. And it has features that are intermediate. For example, you well know that there's an oscillation, a tension between the Gemara and Shabbos talks about whether that phase, the world will be natural or supernatural, right? Olam kaminhag ha'noyeg, the world will continue the way it is now, with birth,
and with even with poverty, although the poverty will be supplied, people will be pure, poor, but other people will give it. It won't be, and marriage and death not, because there'll be chesamatim. But nevertheless, the world will look natural, except it will look peaceful. And the political dispensation will be Torah, there'll be no wars, it'll be a peaceful situation. Everyone end up in Israel, everyone with his own share in Israel, no Jews left elsewhere, many detailed predictions. It says in Tehillim, for example, Ish v'ish yulad shem, that anyone born in Israel, anyone here born in Israel? No one? Wow. Anyone born in Israel will be escorted back there by the non-Jews around them. Right? They'll pick it up and personally make sure they get back there. All sorts of interesting things. But basically the context will be a natural context. The other opinion in the Gemara is that the world will have a supernatural appearance. It will be something completely unfamiliar, something completely transcendent. And the problem is, of course, that in these areas, I think I mentioned this before, we don't really have arguments. And even worse, the Rambam paskens both of those. How'd you like that? The Rambam brings both opinions la'alacha in two different places. Well, there are many ways to deal with this, but the Ari points out that they're both true. In other words, listen well to this. The world will be appearing natural to a person with natural eyes, but the world will be completely supernatural to a person with trained eyes. That the more you sensitize yourself, it's like that you have a premonition of that in many fields. Now, if you're a professional in a certain field, there's things you notice that you couldn't even demonstrate to somebody who's not a professional, right? Here, Dr. Gladder can listen to your heart, and he can tell what's going to be with you in 5 years, and 10 years, and 15, and 20 years. He can spell it all out for you. If he put his stethoscope on your chest, you wouldn't know what he's talking about, right? You hear creaks and grunts and groans and squeaks, you wouldn't know what you're listening to. But he's sensitized to that, and he can tell that. You in your own professional field can see all sorts of things that other people, in a much, much deeper application of that principle, you will see things that to others will look natural, but because you have sensitized yourself incredibly spiritually by coming to Gateway's seminars, you will see all the secrets beneath the surface. And the Ari bases that on a pasuk, and it's a whole discussion. Therefore, both of those will be true. But I want to extract from that one concept we need for us. You see that however you cut it, it's intermediary. It's something like this world, but it's something like the next world. Right? Another example. You will be free will in this space, but there will be very little free will. The Gemara calls it Yad Mishayim Ba'al Chesed. That means you have free will, but very little. Right? How little? You'll have the free will where, technically speaking, you can make choices, but practically you would never make the wrong choice. Why? Because it will be a place of such clarity that no one in his right mind would make the wrong choice. Now you make the wrong choice because you think you can get away with it. But in that world, you wouldn't dream you could get away with it. It's absolutely, if you want an analogy, the free will in that space will be like angels have free will, malachim, or other Mauritian have free will. What kind of free will does an angel have? He has exactly the same free will that you have to walk into a fire. When you stand on top of a tall building, do you have free will to leap off? Well, technically, yes. Practically, no. Because you see yourself immediately becoming part of the scenery. The consequences are absolutely plain. You just wouldn't do it. So, yes, you have free will, but in practice, it's almost irrelevant. That's how an angel is. Angels don't make mistakes, by and large, generally speaking, don't make mistakes. Because why? Because they're so clear about the reality. The reason we have free will is because we are... Anything beneath us in creation has no free will because it doesn't see enough animals. Anything above us in creation doesn't have free will because they see too much angels. We are fixed at exactly that point of darkness where we see enough of the light to motivate us upwards, and we're stuck in enough of the darkness to motivate us. That's why we have free will. As soon as you move up into the zone of a malach, an angel, in that space human beings will have free will like that. That means you will be completely free to do an avera. But it will be as silly and as ridiculous and as obviously faithful and as walking into a fire, therefore nobody will. Now, the point again I want to extract is that it's intermediate. You have much less free will than you have now, but you have free will. In the first place, you have no free will at all. In fact, from here on in, the world looks completely different. Here's 1,000 years here, and there's a place that is called Shabbat. And there the world has no resemblance to what it is now. It says the world will consist of water, it's called Olam Harum. The world will be destroyed. Means the present format destroyed, consisting of water. Tzaddikim floating over the water with wings. That's what you're going to look like. An amazing diaphanous wings. You're going to be floating over the water. Imagine that, we'll be flitting by each other, floating, an amazing thing, right? appealing? That's what the Gemara says. Of course, what it means needs discussion. But that's going to be a world completely... So however you look at it, this phase that we meant to share is intermediate between what we have now and what we have then. By the way, from here on in, we have no idea what it is. No idea. Maharal says that the Torah never talks about this. Not only does it mention that there is such a thing, the Torah never describes what this will look like. And the Nevi'im, when they speak only about the Messianic Age. All predictions of the Nevi'im and the prophets are about the Messianic Age. No one ever told us what this will look like, and the reason is because no prophet could see it. This is completely beyond familiarity with human beings. And so, I am very wrong, so I look into the Lord. Nobody can see it besides you. By the way, can I just stop for one moment?
There are two times in history that are like that. You know that?
These 6 days, no human being can see either. We can have no knowledge of what the world looked like in these 6 days. And we can have no knowledge of what the world will look like in the 7,000 years of the Messiah. We can have no knowledge of it. The reason we can have no knowledge of this is a subject. The reason we can have no knowledge of this place is it's beyond human comprehension.
The Yerushalayim says an amazing thing. Absolutely amazing. When I saw this, I slept it. I ran over to Mario and showed him. He said, you look at this, push it. It's like, that's something to get excited about. It's one of the first things you should have realized. He says this. He says that
the way the world works, the way Torah works, is when the 6 days of creation ends and the world begins, he says that the Torah description of the world here always has two layers. It's called chat. Chat means the simple description. And then there's what's beneath the surface, all the way down to sod. Right?
The characteristics of chat and sod as opposed to each other are, chat is what the word literally means. Right? What things on the surface. Sod is always layer beneath layer beneath layer, unfathomable depth, which takes a lifetime of dedication and intensity and study to get some vision of what that looks like. Now listen to this.
That's how the Torah works. Like the 6 days of creation, what the Torah is doing, is all the Torah description of the 6 days of creation, then the word tells you the Torah. And a lifetime of dedication and intensity and perception may begin to show you what it looked like in reality. Isn't that amazing? And why is it simple?
Because obviously, the 6 days of creation, the Torah is talking to that. It's talking about that. It's talking about the root causes of the formation of the world. That's what it's talking about. Then it leaves the pregnancy, the embryonic phase, the genetic embryonic phase, and birth begins at the end of the 6 days or the 7th day of creation, and the world begins. So here the Torah is talking what an adult looks like. You want to delve back into what genetics are, you've got to delve very deep. And here they start talking to them. Which of course you know what that means.
That when you learn sacred races and you learn about the creation of the world, when you start having pictures of what it looked like, put a man in the garden and a woman, you know the kind of pictures they do for the children in the Bible storybooks? There's a man in the garden, there's a lady, they've sort of got the vines sort of draped over there, and there's like an apple, and that's completely, completely ridiculous. That for sure didn't look like that. What does Adam Rishon look like? Physically, I'm not talking about intelligence. What does he look like? Physically, he expanded to the whole extent of the universe. He occupied every planet. Mephoshim says, you know why there are so many planets out there? Why are there so many billions of light years out there with untold, undiscovered stars, planets? What for? The Bala Musa says to show you how rich he is. To show you what a stage he lays on for your life. But the Mekubonim don't say that. The Mekubonim say because those were relevant. Adam was there. Adam occupied the extent of the universe. He used the whole universe, not just the world. After the Chet got shrunk down to a mere 100 amos, which is about 50 meters. 50 meters, American, 60 yards, 70 yards, like that's how tall he was. After the Chet. And then he got shrunk down eventually, and after the Mabul, things got much more constrained. So, can you picture what a human being was who was made out of light? His skin was made out of light. Or, Aleph Avresh. You know there's a kalal in Zimius that whenever an Aleph becomes an Ayin, it represents a fall from spiritual to physical. Adam was clothed in garments of light. Ayin Aleph Avresh. After the Chet, his skin became Ayin Avresh. Or Ayin Avresh. Or, right? And the word or Ayin Avresh spells in Hebrew Iver, blind. You can't see. What is light? You could see. Now you're clothed in a material that you can't. That's why in English this is called a high. Why is this called a thick hive in English? Because it hives good. So, you can't tell.
We cannot delve back. And that's why the Gemara says that our locker, that you're not allowed to try to figure out what it looks like yet. The Gemara says, Kavod Elokim has to know. That's the hidden. Because any time you try to conceive what things look like here, you might actually get it wrong.
So you'll be distorting Torah again. Here, all we have of this is the Torah. We don't have the political concept. And similarly to the Rambam, that when the Mashiach comes and on, we no longer have that place. All we have of that place is the Torah.
He puts it amazingly. When the Rambam goes into the Halachas of Mashiach, he says like this, that I'm going to tell you now what will be in that place, but don't think it will look like this in practical detail. Why? Because lo yedo adam ech shiye ad shiye, those are his words. Nobody can know what it will look like then until it happens. So the Bris Kerov said about that, is this some kind of a joke? The Rambam's writing Halacha. He's telling you what's going to be. And he says, and of course, I'm going to tell you what's going to be, but you can't know it until it happens. What the Rambam means is, I'm going to tell you the Torah of the matter.
We have the Torah. We have to learn the Torah of the matter. That's application. That's important.
But what will look like in geopolitical, physical detail, that you will no concept until it happens. It's a very important flow, is that when it happens, you'll know. Don't be mistaken. Then you will know the things that you knew before, the Torah of them, then you'll know what... Yeah. I said once of Yisro Kachon Inspector, the Balabatim said to him once, he said, do you believe Mashiach could come now? So he said, yes, I think it was on Purim they were talking to. So he said, of course I believe Mashiach could come now. So they said, but look, Rebbe, it says before Mashiach comes, a certain number of predictions have to be in place, and those are not in place yet. Various details. So then how could you believe? So he said, when Mashiach comes, you'll understand what those predictions, then you'll understand what those meant. Your job is not to worry about that. You are Tzitiyat Yeshua. You should be hoping the Mashiach will come. When he comes, then you'll understand. The Hasidic version of that story, of that, is the Hasidim say, all Hasidim tell you the same story, it doesn't matter which Rebbe it was, but the Rebbe was governing very intensely for Mashiach one Shabbos. Long, long, long tefillah. So the Hasidim went over to the Rebbe office and they said, Rebbe, you know, it says the Mashiach cannot come on Shabbos. He can't come on Shabbos. So that's the Shabbos he's governing for Mashiach. He said, let him come, so there'll be a kasha. Now, that's not meant superficially. That's not meant superficially. What's meant in depth is, you don't know what those things mean until they happen. That's not true. Okay, so there are two phases of history, the first and the last, where we don't know what it's going to look like. We don't have insight into, we have the total of the issue. Okay, now, Father, for the educators among you, that's why there's such a strong opposition to giving children picture books. Yes? That means that even opposition to giving children pictures of Torah, even in this way. Because when you give a child a book with a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu, you absolutely destroy the Torah image. Because whatever you draw in your book, it doesn't look like that. So some educators say, okay, we show you from the back only. Others say, it's not so important. Others say, children form their own image of pictures anyhow, so it doesn't matter. But many people are poisoned by images that they were given when they were 3, 4, 5 years old and never get those out of your head. That's why all of you, from as you are, when you hear the word God, you involuntarily see a big man in the sky with a white beard, and most of you even see a very medieval arm reaching out, touching the fingertip of Adam. Yeah. That's what you see, and it takes an effort to eradicate those pictures. That's how you, that's how minds work. Anyway, be that as it may, but certainly pictures of the faith that there's no way to begin to picture, now that's completely... Now, here's our question. If Mashiach is intermediate,
that means we enter a zone where it has some of the features of the previous set of era, and has some of the features of the post-Messianic era, here's the question. Do we need it?
The question is like this. The Gemara says that there are two phases of human existence. A phase of work and a phase of reward. Hayon la'feiton, macha l'kabel scharos. You are here today to work and do the mitzvahs, and tomorrow to receive the reward. So here's the question.
If we have to work, and we have real work now, real free will, then when we get through the work of free will, give you a reward. So if this is to be a reward, full reward, what are you getting there? Half reward, half free will. Very little free will and amazing, beautiful identity system. And if you want to tell me that it's not reward, it's work, so you put work. Why are you in three phases? I don't see any happy phases. It's an amazing question. It should be. No? It's a fundamental question. 1 second. I will answer it, not you. Yes.
I mean,
what's the answer? Mashiach. Mashiach,
then
you're saying Mashiach. No, that's not a problem. Yeah, not an issue. But, Mashiach HaYosef is a precursor phase to Mashiach HaYosef, which is a clarification phase. Mashiach HaYosef will clarify, give us, clarify, say us various things, very vague dark issue, whether you survive, you won't survive, complex issue. But the problem is, why do you need a phase intermediate? Is it work? Give you the full work with full freedom. If it's reward, give me full reward. Why do you need a halfway done?
Some work, but very little. Work, but with almost no possibility of going wrong. Free will, which is not practically relevant. Who needs it? What's it doing there? Do you have a question? Okay. Now, there's much more than one... there's more than one way to answer this question. But let me share with you the Maharal's answer, which is a wonderful insight. Maharal says like this, and I'm paraphrasing it very broadly to put it into more easily digestible form. Maharal says like this. I'm giving you one narrow application that comes out of his principles. Says Maharal like this.
Now, while you exist in this phase of history, you are seriously limited. The fact that you have free will, which means you operate against tremendous difficulties, severely limited. For example, let's say you'd like to learn much more and develop your chesed and midas. There's a lot of practical obstructions.
Learning, for example. Right? You have a very short life. Your life consists of many things that limit your ability to learn. You get tired. You get hungry. You have to make a living, support your family. There are tremendous obstructions. You may have family issues, all sorts of problems that may frustrate your desire to reach your perfection. Now, Hashem doesn't want you to have that. Hashem doesn't want you to go into the next world in a mystery, as a frustrated, imperfect individual. He doesn't want that. He wants you to go into Shabbos. You know that the 7,000 years is called Shabbos. Not corresponding to the seventh day of creation. There's a Ramban that works out the correspondence in detail. How each day of creation corresponds to 1,000 years in detail. In detail, right down to the hours. So Hashem doesn't want you to end up history and then go into Olam Haba with all your imperfections that are not your fault. All the lack of perfection that you never managed to develop. He doesn't want that. Do you know what he does? Listen to this. It gives you a phase of history during which you guarantee to reach your perfection totally. That means the work of the world comes to an end, and Hashem says, before you go into Olam Haba, here's the month of Mashiach. During your month of Mashiach, you're going to have no worries, no problems, no worries, no health worries, no... You have rocket-powered opportunity to take everything that you are and reach your perfection. But, on condition. Now listen to this condition.
The world lasts for 6,000 years. Each of these corresponds to one day of creation. Then comes your Olam Haba, which corresponds to Shabbos. So, listen well to this. The days of the week,
correspond to the years of the world. Shabbos corresponds to the world to come. Yeah? What corresponds to a Yom Tov? You got Chol, weekday, you got Shabbos. The Chol, the weekday, corresponds to the years of the world. Shabbos corresponds to the next world. What corresponds to a Chag, to a Yom Tov? Says Maharal, Yom Tov Mashiach.
These days are like weekdays. Yom Tov Mashiach are like a Yom Tov. Olam Haba is like Shabbos. Now what's the characteristic of a Yom Tov? Are Yom Tov intermediate between Chol and Shabbos? Are Yom Tov you can cook, but only if you stop cooking before it. Only if you live the before it. Says my role. Know what I mean? During this phase of history, you'll be able to develop yourself at all the secular standards that you find yourself. Then you'll have to Yom Tov Mashiach. Here you will have the opportunity to develop your absolute perfection, but only if you started before. None new opportunities now. Because you began, yeah. Any area you opened up with your personality, your attempted to perfect, and you were unsuccessful, Hashem is not going to say, he's going to give you an opportunity where it's no fault of yours, you try hard, you didn't manage, now you get to develop to perfection. But only if you lit the fire before. Actually, the way the Maharal puts it is stupendous. He says, you know what? He says, the way the Mashiach is like a Yom-tip on a Friday. It's a Yom-tip on a Friday. It's a Yom-tip that goes into Shabbos. And what's the halacha of a Yom-tip that goes into Shabbos? If you didn't make an Erev, that's what he said. If you didn't, this is the secret of Erev Tashin, he said tomorrow. If you didn't make an Erev on Thursday, so that Yom Tov making the Shabbat, your Yom Tov ain't going to be making the Shabbat. You've got to make an Erev. You've got to spend your life now making the mitzvah of Erev Tashin. You've got to take all the work you're doing now and make it so that Yom Tov can continue to run in preparation for Shabbat. And that's the secret, he said, of Yom Tov Mashiach. As a Yom Tov, just like a Shabbat.
And more or less, no, this is the beginning, last week.
So it's like... Well, the question here was, the Jews not share Torah and Mitzvah. There's even worse news than that.
Because during the month of the Shia, not everybody's going to be there at all. Not everybody's going to be there. To get into the month of the Shia, the head of Israel is here, the month of the Shia, this world. There's a list of criteria that you need to get there. The only way you can get to the head of not long ago, that everybody gets. And the amazing opportunity to experience this particular place, you need Torah. You need to either learn Torah or make it possible for someone else to do it, like a woman who makes it possible for a man, or a person who pays somebody else, according to Rabbi Yossi, who pays him, according to Rabbi Moshe Shapiro, he has to pay him to the extent that he couldn't have done it otherwise. Not just that you give money to a guy, you make it possible. That's why it's your credit, right? He couldn't have done it without you. You make it possible. The Yossi here is a very specific topic. The Rakhal says that only 600,000 people here. Only the 600,000 original Ruth the Shabbos that stood in Mount Torah. Of course, many of us will be subsumed into those Ruth the Shabbos, right? They have branches. And he has a lot of detail about the branches. But that is a unique phase in Yom Kippur. During Yom Kippur Mashiach, you have to get to it. Now, here it's very complicated. Let me just answer this question first, and I'll talk about that. Yes?
I'm sorry.
I explained like this.
That you have 6,000 years of history, right?
Right.
You are now. The end of these 6,000, before the year 6,000, is some duration of Messianic age.
Okay.
But in the 6,000, then you move completely beyond the year 1,000 years of show.
Okay.
So you must understand it's part of this world, not part of the next.
Right, but the end of these last 2,000
years. It's the last phase of the last 2,000 years.
Okay.
Lasting how long, we don't know.
Okay.
We cannot know. Now, yes. You're not successful, not if you don't. If you're not successful through factors beyond your control, you began the work.
The thing is, we need a lot more time, and yet we'll...
This is not going to be time of the same quality. Issues quality, not quite. Okay, now, Shkias HaMeisim, let's talk about that. We still got a lot of stuff to talk about. Gilgulim and all that mysterious stuff. Don't you want to hear about that?
So, Shkias HaMeisim, first of all, I'm not going to go into detail. It's a very complex subject.
It's
very much more fun. The reiteration of the dead, we're not talking about the clear of making that as a curse sporadically throughout history, like by your head, etc. We're talking about a whole new concept. Then there will be, the Gemara Kedek says twice, schizomatic, as a very interesting way to show you that what the two phases will be. One phase of schizomatic will take place where the dead will be revived somewhere at the beginning of your wisdom share, according to one opinion over the first 40 years, according to another opinion after 40 years.
It's just like 40 days of preparation of the fetus, 40 years in the midbar. There will be then schizomatic. There's a lot of detail about the phase and the sequence and the order. And these will be people who merit to see the Messianic Age.
According to the opinion I told you in my writing, the purpose was that generally understood purpose is that these will be people who have a unique characteristic, not only Torah, but people who long to see Eretz Israel rebuilt correctly. People have special longing to see the Beit HaMikdash, Yerushalayim, that means to see the world in a sequence in this way. Not people who long for closeness with Hashem in general would be the sense here, but people who long to see the world as a created world, and why not can see the way it should have manifested, those are people who have a special scope to be brought back in Sphere of Amazing. Then there will be a second sphere later, not clear when exactly, of everyone. Not of everyone, because everyone according to the Dorosha Yishumas,
even those who want to say they have no share in the world to come, everybody will have a share in the world to come, and will be resurrected eventually. How you resolve that machlekes, I spoke about a few days ago, I'm not going to go into that. Everyone will have a place. Now, what will happen between the two spheres
is a fascinating argument. Will these who revive die, and then come back, will be resurrected again? Or will they just simply remain alive and everybody else will be resurrected? The language in the Gemara is Einan Chayzrin La'atla. These two who are resurrected will then move through Yemei HaMashiach, and Einan Chayzrin La'atla. The simple interpretation will not die. But the technical language, the accurate translation, will not return to dust. The Rashi says an amazing thing. Everybody goes crazy about this, Rambam and the other, the Ritzvot, and the Foshim got crazy about this. Rashi says they won't return to dust. And Rashi, what it means is they will die, but they won't disintegrate. They won't return to dust, is Rashi. These people that appear now will die, again, second time, but they won't return to dust. Their bodies will remain intact, just like Yashem Beta, and then they'll be resurrected again. All the other proportions say, Rashi, who needs that? What's the purpose? The purpose of dying is a disintegration for a different. What's the purpose of dying and not becoming dust again? Most proportions say that Adam Chazan Akram means they'll get up from their dust, and then they will remain. And they won't die again, and others will be revived. Rashi says, like our past verse, other proportions say they'll get into the Shita, which is only instantaneous. They'll die instantaneously and be resurrected, right? Also, there are those who say, incidentally, that if Mashiach comes in your day, you won't need to pay for processes there. If Mashiach comes in your day and you're one of those who are to share the image of Mashiach, which is amazing, all you'll need is to die for Israel instantaneously. Very, very famous instantaneous transition into that phase, yeah.
Let me just make sure I understand something. There's like 234 years till the end of, till we get to 6,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You describe a lot of action.
Could be one day.
It could be one day.
I didn't begin to describe the action. You know what the action is?
It wasn't the action that you described somehow.
Yeah. Right. All we talked about is
resurrection and dying.
Resurrection is like a flick of an eye. But
everything you describe tells us happens between now and the next 234 years.
Mabaya. What's the problem with that? You didn't begin to hear what, you know what's going to happen? Get a load of this.
When the Mashiach begins, not only did you make that happen, all sorts of things happen. There's a war. There's a war called the Magog, that's right. And he wants us to be elaborate detail of the war being. All the Western nations will march against Israel, camp in the hills of Jerusalem, with their money and their women.
They bring everything with them. Not just salt.
Very active coming here. Yeah.
And then there will be, and they'll use the Arabs, it says, the Ramban says, the Western nations will use the Arabs as a point of attack. They'll camp around the hills. It's tremendous detail. And then, by the way, this is after 7 years of preparation. The Mosque says there's 7 years of preparation, during the fourth year of which there'll be a Baal Shiva movement. Many people coming back to their Torah sensitivities during this. Then the enemies will camp around Jerusalem. Then there'll be a war, an awesome war. The Gaon says that it will be a war that will take 12 minutes. 12 minutes, during which a third of the world will die, a third will survive, and a third will be injured. Now, 12 minutes we could fit in, right? But imagine the God saying that in 1790, that it'll be an international war that takes 12 minutes. Must have been not like a misprint if there ever was one. Okay, you'll find that reprinted in our Stern books. So, now, we don't know what this means. Again, we don't know what it means. We don't know what it will look like. Okay, this could be much less painful than it meets the naked eye. We don't know, okay? But these are some of the events. Many, many other events. The Gemara says that in 7 years running up to this, there will be political changes. The political changes will be that the parliaments of the nations will become houses of prostitution. In case you hadn't known. Etc. The tremendous, this is a 7 year cycle. Now, we don't know if it's been 7 or 70 or 7 days or 7 weeks. We don't know. Again, these are all coded references that will unfold as they begin to happen. So those are some of the ideas. What is Shia Samaritan? Is a whole shear in its own right. Shia Samaritan does not mean people will get up and continue walking. Shia Samaritan means that death will be dissolved. That there will be no death, no passage into the past. As I tried to explain before, that the present will be ever present. You'll move from the present to the future without the present becoming past. Can you imagine that? No. It won't be a yesterday. Do you know what that means? You'll enjoy today, and you move into tomorrow, not as yesterday as a present memory, but as yesterday here with you now, living that as well. Can you imagine that? Every moment of ecstasy in your life will be felt in all its sharpness, and you'll move into the next moment of ecstasy with that moment still being experienced. Can you imagine such a thing? Because the passage of time is a death, and that will be dissolved. That was designed for a lot more than what we... And you have to prepare for that, of course. How do you prepare for that? You have to expand your consciousness. You have to be a person who wakes up in the morning hoping. Now, most people have sagas, oh, I'll arrive today, just won't be worse than yesterday. Like, that'll be a successful day. That's not virtue. That's virtue. So wake up in the morning, today has to be a total explosion of creation. Every moment has to be a complete explosion. Otherwise, I'm literally up over ether. You know what that means? Up over ether. It wasn't me poetic. It means I take everything that I am and I ash it into elements. And then I make that into the rich earth of a new growth. And as soon as that happens, I ash that and give birth to myself again. You can't be here today because you were here yesterday. That's called dying. You have to be here today because you recreate who you are. You wake up in the morning, you just hope today won't be worse than yesterday. What kind of life is that? You have to see the opportunity after that. It's a tremendous message of Krishna.
But in the end of the day, that's our timeline in terms of human culture. Let's talk briefly about your guru. Where are people who are dead now?
See? People say they're in Gana or Olam Haba. Inaccurate. They're not in Olam Haba.
No, they're not. Olam Haba is here. Nobody got there yet. That's after Yom HaDin HaGadol. Nobody's there. These people are not here. They're also not in... Well, Gana is a complicated issue. You can go to that. Rambam says Gana is a temporary holding zone that you go to when you die.
There's an initial phase. He has a whole sefer on this. The Sharagmu. A whole sefer, a wonderful sefer. A rabbi in Detroit. You know who that is, Rabbi... His name?
Iron.
What?
Iron.
What's his name?
Iron.
I'm not sure. Who? No. Who? What's his name? Yes. He put out a paper a year or two ago. Beautiful parish, elucidating and bringing out the Ramban on all these things. Gan Eden is a initial phase that you get to after death, leading into the holding zone that goes throughout history. By the way, that's also got scary stuff. I don't know if you're going to enjoy this, but scary transition from this world to the next. You have to go through a river of fire that's called the Nahar Dinur. Nahar Dinur, the river of fire, not Gehenna. That's another problem. Gehenna's another problem. This is called the river of fire. That's the transitional zone. You know, the Greeks have this too, right? The Greeks call it the Rubicon. Where did they get all this from? The river Styx. Right, that you go through that. Anyway, the point is, in the folklore of the nations is always sparse of truth. But this is a river of fire. Nahar Dinur means river of fire. The word Dinur, by the way, is the same letters as Yarden, the Jordan, which in Kabbalah means the river of Din. You have to go through that river to get into Eretz Yisrael. You have to go through that to go... That's a whole description of what it means and what that river is and what the river is made of. Do you know what the Ramah Mifana says? I just can't resist telling you this. You know, he says, this river called the Nahar Dinur is a river of fire. Do you know what it's made of, says the Ramah Mifana? He brings sources. It's made of the sweat of the chayes who carry the kiseh. Yeah, again, Hashem's throne is carried by angels. Chayes. The chayes are the angels who carry Hashem's throne. And they sweat. They sweat as they're carrying the throne. And the sweat that falls off them is fire. And it pours into a river called the Nahar Dinur. And to die, you've got to go through that river. What does this mean? What does this mean? Listen to the amazing explanation of the Rami Pali. He says like this. These angels carry the throne of Hashem. Hashem's throne is not heavy. The Kvod Shemayim, Hashem's throne is not heavy. It's Noisav. It carries those who carry it, like the Aron. Doesn't make any effort to carry the throne of Hashem. Why is it heavy for the Chayas? Because of all the Chilul Hashem you make. Every time you make a Chilul Hashem, every time you do an Avera, you make Hashem's throne heavy in the world. It's hard to uphold Hashem's covenant in Shemayim. So every Avera you do gives the Chayas work. And the sweat that falls off them is the result of the work that you caused. And you've got to swim through that. You know what I mean? It says, Al Rosh Rishayim Yachol, that the river of fire that pours off the sweat of the Chayas pours onto the heads of the Rishayim. Because they caused that. Had they been the reason of Kvod Shemayim, that Kisei wouldn't have had any effort to hold up. There wouldn't have been no sweat of the Chayas. Isn't that amazing? Mina keneged mina, right? Okay, anyway, be that as it may, that is the...
When people die, let's say a person dies here, where is the Neshama go to? The Neshama doesn't go to Olam Haba. It goes to a zone called Olam HaNeshamos. Olam HaNeshamos is a spiritual zone where the Neshama has some of the pleasure of Olam Haba and some of the pain of working out its own problems. And that is a level called Olam HaNeshamos in general. Where is it? Right here.
Right here. Can the neshamas in that dimension hear us? Fantastic machlokes in the Gemara. According to one opinion, they know what's going on here. According to another opinion, they don't, because they don't need to. According to a third opinion in the Gemara in Brachas, they know exactly what's doing here, because other people who die take their news. When other neshamas die, they ask them, how's my family doing? And they tell them the news of what's doing here, like people in another country. There's apparently a source in the Zohar, although I've never seen it, that says that they come down to weddings of children and grandchildren. You know, the Hasidim have a custom, amazing thing, absolutely amazing. I went to a wedding of the son of the grandson of the Biala Rebbe. His grandson, I happen to know his son, he's a Rav in Manchester, and we've had a long association, and I went to his son's wedding. And I said, you're amazing, very, very amazing affair, two Hasidic dynasties, right? Very. They had a person there, an elderly Hasid, singing a song. I don't know, maybe some of you are Hasidim, I come from South Africa, it's all Litvak. This fellow was singing a song, welcoming the ancestors to the chuppah. Have you ever heard that? Amazing. He was great. First, it took about half an hour. First, welcoming the grandparents to the chuppah by name. Mamash welcoming them in to the chuppah. And then the great grandparents has a long, illustrious line of Hasidim. He went all the way back to all the greats of Hasidus. They were all personally, not just invited, they all personally welcomed as if they were walking into the hall to be present, right? Amazing thing. Very emotional thing. Anyway, and the chassam was like shrinking smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, you know, it's like. That's called Olam and the Shabbos. And there's a whole din of Olam and the Shabbos. They can be contacted. The Shabbos in that world can be contacted. They can be brought down here. Of course, it's not allowed. A very negative thing. The Mephoshim say that if you contact the soul of a person, Olam and the Shabbos, it causes them terrible pain. You know, it's very fashionable to do that in the secular world. The secular world, tremendous popular thing of getting hold of the Shabbos seances. In the current jargon is that they can become your guide. You get in touch with the guide. They are. We have exactly the opposite conception. Is that they cannot help you. You can help them.
What about God's Dafni and Akeva?
There was a whole shiur in it 2 days ago. An idea of Dafni and Akeva. Oscar Abecha. About the permissibility of Dafni and Akeva. Or rather what the focus should be. Because not allowed to speak to dead people. Not allowed to speak to angels, dead people, asking them. Some people don't sing Shalom Aleichem on Friday night. Because you appear to be asking a malach to give you a bracha, that could be avodah zarah. You have to be very careful. You get all sure on that problem. So, and I'm sure it was recorded. So, these are souls that can, we know they can be contacted because you have incidents in Tanakh, right? Shmuel was called down by the Baal HaSoev for Shaul. There's an amazing thing about it. Do you know what it says? That he went to this woman, this guy, and she shouldn't know he was the king because it was forbidden, a pain of death. She called down the soul of Shmuel. As he appeared, the Mephoshim says she knew that the man next to her was Shaul HaMelech. Why? Because normally when a soul is called down, it comes down upside down. It appears upside down. I'm not going to go into the reasons, amazing thing. But in honor of Malchus, it came the right way up. And as soon as she saw the soul of Shmuel, she knew that this man was Shaul. Amazing thing. And then the Gemara says that Shmuel complained. Because when he called down, he had tremendous anguish when they called him. Why? Because when he heard his name being called, he thought he was being called to din. And he had tremendous pachad. In fact, the Midrashim say he grabbed hold of Moshe Rabbeinu to come and testify that he never did anything wrong. And in case you think that's scary, how will you feel when you hear your name? Imagine, right? Shmuel Anovi heard his name. He was absolutely petrified when he heard his name. He brought Moshe. So how is an ordinary person going to feel when they hear it? So we don't call out their names. Actually, the Mekubalim have another problem. How could a woman with such tumor get hold of a Mishon of such Kedusha? It's interesting the way the mind works, right? These are the minds of the Mekubalim. How could a woman of such using complete tumor, forbidden, pain of death, if a killer Baal HaSoev, how could she get hold of the Neshama Shmuel? And the answer is, every soul has layers upon layers upon layers, shells outside of shells, outside of shells. She was able to get hold of the outermost, lowest vessel, the lowest garment, the one closest to the world of physicality. She could get a hold of that. And by means of that, she could pull. Anyway, there's a whole discussion on that's doing what?
That's giving credence, validity to her power.
What's the problem?
In other words, they're saying there are people who can do such things.
What's the problem with it? Who said they're not? What's the problem? You're making an assumption that it's not valid. Of course it's valid.
Even among the guys.
Why not? I've seen witch doctors use papers to do all sorts. What? The problem is that most people today claiming to be doing such things are just pure charlatans and moneymakers. There are three groups today. There are those who are completely invalid. There are those who are invalid but sincere. They're sincere. They think they have. That means. Yes. And then there's a very small group left that know what they're doing. Okay? Avoid all three. Okay. Now, now this is called the Shah.
Now, here, let's finish with this. You're rooted. And the Shah that leaves the world, okay, here in history, can come down again. Can come down again as a Yugu. Huh? A Yugu is that the Shah comes down in a new body, in a new phase.
But people have terrible misunderstandings about this. First of all, it's not the same neshama. It's not the same soul. It's only the part of the neshama that needs a tikkun. The part that perfected what it had to do doesn't need to come down again. Which means that history progresses,
smaller and smaller fragments are coming down. Right? Smaller, I mean, you understand? All that's coming down is the remaining part of the previous people that didn't get it. All the parts that are being corrected are always remaining where they are. So it's only the fragments of a neshama. It might be just a nefesh,
says the Ari. He has a whole lengthy work on this. You can read it. It's very open. Yes.
Is
no. I'll explain that. No. He says like this. Imagine you have a neshama that has something incomplete, for many, many possible reasons. The parts that were not completed need to come down again. Now a man in order to do the job in the second Google, they have to come down again. The parts that are not completed.
What?
Absolutely, absolutely, yes. Yep. Now, there are a number of reasons that a neshama could come down again. One, because it never completed its work in the previous. Two, a special avera that it needs to be mitaken. Three, it never did a certain mitzvah because it couldn't. For example, he says, Ari, every neshama has to come back until it's done all the mitzvahs in the Torah. Now, there's no way you can do all the mitzvahs in the Torah in one beautiful. You can't be a man and a woman, unless you live in Southern California, maybe. But I mean, normally, you couldn't, with all due respect to the Californians. But the Californians are so cool, they never hold it against me. Anyway, the point is, you'd have to be a man, a woman, a kohen, a lady. You'd have to be everything, right? To fulfill all the mitzvahs. Every neshama has to fulfill all its organs. Each organ corresponds to a mitzvah. Mitzvah eser. So they have to come down again and fulfill all the mitzvahs. Secondly, there are special punishments. Gilgul can be a terrible, terrible punishment for certain sensual crimes, without going into detail, and the shaman could be brought back in a rock. Trapped in a rock. You don't mean as a rock. It's not a problem being a rock. Or underwater. Stifled underwater. Or, for example, he says that the punishment for homosexuality is for a shaman to be brought back in a woman's body. Not a woman. A man stuck in a woman's body. And he has a great detail about all the consequences. Women, incidentally, don't get gilgulim. Good news, huh? They just get Gehenna. Okay, now... I'll tell you what it says about that. Fascinating thing. I don't know if everyone agrees to this, but he has a lengthy section in Shah Gilgulim when he says that normally women don't need Gilgul. There's a method of Tikkun called Gehenna, which anybody could get, but Gilgul has particular reasons. He says an amazing thing. Women ordinarily do not have Gilgulim. Here's where they have Gilgulim. It says like this. The Gemara says that a Zivug Sheni, listen to this amazing thing, Zivug Sheni, a second marriage is difficult. Second marriage, very difficult. Says Ari, you're making a bad mistake. It doesn't mean a second marriage. First of all, second marriage is often very good. Often people are much more mature, know what they're looking for, much, I don't mean that. That's not a second marriage. Second marriage, says Ari, is a marriage to the same woman in a second lifetime. And at the second marriage of the same couple, because they pass through the same neshama, of course they have to marry each other. And what happens is this. Here's a couple that are married, and they leave the world. The man unfortunately needs to come back to meet the tachan certain things as a gilgul. The woman is commanded, sent down again to the world, so that he can marry her again in the second lifetime, and she gets upset. Because the reason she needed to come down again is because this slob needed to get sent down again to fix himself up. So she's sent down again to marry. And that's a second marriage. That's what he says. The second marriage is not another marriage. It's the second marriage to the same woman in the second lifetime. And now she is resentful because she didn't correct herself in the first. Anyway, that's some of the pattern of Yugum. Yes, one final thing I must mention, and I'll stop here, and that's called Ibu. Ibu
is this. Yugum is when the soul comes down and is born again. Now, for example, the time it tells, inshallah, Yugum goes through his own Yugum.
He tells the five people that he was before. That he tells him. He says exactly who he was in the previous three generations. He was a certain Spanish individual who made the mistake in the Bris Mila, and he had to come down again because of that. Before that, he was because of the five personas that he actually was, and he lists them and explains why he had to come down in each one. The Ari used to tell his Talmidim, "You were this, you were this." He walked among the graves. The Ari used to shove in the neshamas in each grave, and what they.
I'm not sure I understand
that.
Can they come down again in a different persona?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let me finish and I'll stop. Okay.
The humor is this. Let's say you have a. This is a lawyer.
Let's just
go get the details right.
What does
that
make you?
How does the judge have to do?
Let's say. There's a lawyer. There's a thing called evil, very briefly, evil means that a person could not,
a person can be born as an neshama from a previous state, but a person can also be alive in the world and have another neshama come into him while he's alive. That's called evil. One of the reasons, says the Ari, is that a person, for example, let's say a person's alive and he does a particular mitzvah incredibly well. Right? He does a mitzvah with particular dedication and love, intensity and perfection, at that moment could snap into him a tzaddik from a previous door who specialized in that mitzvah. And he now carries two neshamas. Right? And it represents tremendous aliyah for him. And at some later stage in his life, it could leave. That's called evil. Not at birth as a new neshama, but a receiving of a new component of the neshama as he's alive. Right? As if it were evil, the pregnancy within him. Right? Or her. And that could happen repeatedly through. Now, there's a lot more detail. All I've done is briefly sketch the... What I've not done is discuss the teachings of Olam Haba. Right, that we didn't even begin that subject. There's a 7,000 year, but there's also an 8th and a 9th and a 10,000 years. We didn't discuss the other shittas in the Rishonim.
The Rabbi Bechai says that all of this is only one place. But it's one of 7,000 places. And there's 29,000 of those. The 7,000 years we go through now are only one phase of 49,000 cycles.
And there's 49,000 of those. And in each cycle of 7,000 years there's an aliyah.
Back here was a cycle of 7,000 years that preceded Bereshit. Okay? In fact, it's one of the explanations that Hashem created in the destroyed world. There were 7,000 years that ended here. And then we began our 7,000, and our shamans now are like humans compared to fish. Back here. With a tremendous aliyah. And in the next 7,000 years, we will look like fish compared to the elevation of human shamans and death. Okay? And there are many sources of documents. In fact, the totality of all the 49,000 cycles comes to about 15 billion,
which is interestingly more or less what the modern cosmological theory holds has been the time since the Big Bang. But be that as it may, you'll find this reference. It's been in a book called Challenge. You'll find it even translated into English. And, a book printed about 20 years ago on science and Torah has translated Rabbeinu Bechai on this particular piece, and you can look it up. It's called The Cosmic Jubilee, if you want to read it in English. He goes into that. There's a piece called Immortality, Resurrection, and the Age of the Universe by Rabbi Arya Kaplan. He translates an old manuscript of Rabbi Yitzchak of Akko, Talmud of the Ramban. It goes through the same calculations. This is a well-known opinion in the Rishonim. The Ari does not accept this. This is not the opinion of the Ari, which is basically today's definitive opinion. I'm going to stop there, and we'll try and continue.
So that the light goes out.
Keep watching around.